Okay, welcome back to episode 219. Joe, how you doing?
I'm fine, Tim, and welcome back. I understand that you fell in with a young Asian woman and have been traveling around the world.
Yes, that was I left my family, and now I am I'm in Sri Lanka.
Tim, all I can say is the rumors about where you've been and what you're doing, and I'm the recipient of them because for some reason I got all the emails, are, I mean, literally, I think Hitler's disappearance after World War II would be like the only peril I can think of. People have really been fascinated by it, but I guess you've just been very sick, and incidentally, just welcome back. Sorry that, you had the illness, but I'm really happy that you're well now.
Yeah, it was a medically induced vacation.
There you go.
That's how I look at it. While
you were gone, the world cured itself of all of its ills.
I was hoping if I just didn't follow things for a few weeks that the world would heal itself and all the problems would be solved.
Well, did it?
No, it got a little more interesting. There is some optimism out there. We can discuss about that there. I think they're going too far.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resistance, although it's not being reported. We can discuss that. But the first thing I thought was caught my attention, caught a lot of people's attention, was this move by the Department of Justice. Apparently, the Department of Justice received a request from the Association of School Boards. One of these, I guess, public unions or organizations that shouldn't exist but do exist, requesting that the Department of Justice and the FBI, of course, a subset of the Department of Justice, investigate these parents who have the audacity to show up at school board meetings to express their feelings and their opinions about some of the policies and actions of the nation's public schools the past 18 months, 24 months. Actually, it goes back further than that because one of the complaints, of course, is the fact that many of these school boards have pretty much signed off on the introduction of kiddie porn into the public libraries. That's one issue. Of course, the mask issue and the lockdown, and, you know, the closing of the schools and the curriculum and also the critical race theory stuff that they've been shoving down kids' throats for the past few years. And, of course, these it's only understandable that if you start instituting some of these policies, some of these meetings get a little raucous as parents are informed or become aware of what they're doing to their kids. And so it's not surprising that the meetings, and of course, school board meetings have always had been known for this type of stuff. It's because some parents are very passionate about their kids' education, and they do pay for these schools. They pay for the salaries of the school boards. They elect the school boards. But nevertheless, what they're saying is if you raise your voice, you're a domestic terrorist. And Merrick Garland, our esteemed attorney general, wrote a memorandum talking about instructing the FBI to consult with the school boards, how to deal with it and how to report it. So he took the time to write this memorandum about this. Of course, this comes across when the nation experienced a 30% increase in the murder rate. Thousands of more people died last year than the year before. Of course, a lot of this is because of the anarchy that was unleashed by Black Lives Matter, Antifa, something organizations that the FBI seem to have no interest in. And then you have the whole thing, you know, if there is an altercation at a school board, I'm sure the local sheriff's department has the resources to deal with it. This is not an interstate issue. So why is the FBI getting involved? Of course, they're invoking the Patriot Act, terrorism, and just as justification to whoever. There's no evidence of an interstate or a conspiracy of parents to threaten or violence against school board members. But nevertheless, the FBI is somehow the Department of Justice somehow sees it as jurisdiction in these things. But obviously what it comes across is this is an attempt to chill opposition to this agenda. Critical race theory, the use of public schools to choose radical, extreme agendas to students, to groom students. This is the degenerates and perverts and homosexuals have infiltrated these schools and are using curriculum and these things. If you saw some of the pictures of what's accessible to kids as young as 13, it's cartoons of two boys performing oral sex on each other It's out there. This is what's in public schools. This is actually a violation of state law where I live, because to introduce that material to show it to a kid is a violation of to a minor is a it's a criminal violation. And the school board that approved it could construe the law to charge them for these things. And that this is what the parents are upset about. So that's where we are with this. It's obviously it's absurd. The Republicans did, and the Senate did sign, write a letter to Merrick Garland telling him he should back off. I don't know if that what that means. If it has any teeth to it. Saying that you shouldn't construe passionate disagreement with violence or terrorism. It's obviously absurd. Another wrinkle in this, of course, is Merrick Garland has a pecuniary interest in this curriculum because his daughter is married to this guy, Zan Alexander Tanner, who runs this outfit called Panorama Education. Basically, it's an outfit that's cashed in on all this radical critical race theory stuff. And his organization, I think, designs software for the program, for the curriculum, and is involved in like social learning, they call it, or something, conditioning, which is really creepy. But his outfit Panorama has access to, I think, as much as 25% of the nation's public school students. So it's big business. So they're cashing in on this stuff as they're indoctrinating and grooming and warping the children, which is why the parents are so upset. So I've rambled on, so I'll let you get in there.
No, I mean, listen, it's just good to hear your voice, Tim. I mean, it's so good to hear it. Obviously, you make good points. I was going to say that this is a psychological construction. I mean, this is just done with the idea of diminishing sanity and self-esteem in people who identify with European Christian culture, right? Because the two things which are being promoted that people are in opposition to are critical race theory and child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes. Those are the, I mean, they have a few other issues, but those are the, the tip of the spear. And parents don't like this for very good reasons, right? Very good reasons, because you have sexual degeneracy, in fact, being inserted into the child's mind. And critical race theory is, of course, just crackpot pseudo-psychological conditioning of Europeans into thinking that they're the root of all evil on the planet. Mm-hmm. So the parents, in defense of their children, obviously should stand up against this. And bringing out the feds to defend the school boards that are producing degeneracy, it's just a message is being sent that, you're a second-class citizen. The federal government is on the side of the degenerates, right? That's just the message to you're impotent. Because the fact is, that, as you pointed out, the local sheriff couldn't handle this. The jurisdiction of the feds to come into a local school board, which is part of the chain of sovereignty that the republic is based upon, is completely uncertain. I mean, how do they claim jurisdiction? What federal laws are being, violated? So I think it's a bluff, but it's a bluff with a purpose. I mean, I would look at this as kind of a mini 1-6 rebellion, taking over of the Capitol building. I mean, it's just the action of the feds against the parents is just a theatrical event, but it's one with the purpose of damaging the self-esteem of the parents so that they don't believe that they have ability to participate in democracy, and to just underline the power of the domination of the degenerates. That we're in charge. We can have these pictures, and I don't know if you've seen them, but I was sent a collection. It's just horrifying. I mean, just the idea of looking, because these aren't really cartoons; they're just illustrations.
Yeah,
they're not photographs, but they're simply very clear illustrations of sex acts, which for a 13-year-old. Is not just inappropriate, but it is just illegal by any sane standard of law. And these are not, you know, representation should ever be given to young teenage males, particularly, I mean, or women, but it's just, so anyway, the issue is a bluff. You're not going to see a lot of prosecutions. This reminds me of the, like Biden's door-to-door vaccine salesman, you know, I mean, it just isn't really going to happen. It's more a psychological thing that they just put into the news to intimidate the parents. But the response is there's only one, and that is to take the child, your children, out of these schools. I mean, the move into this new phase of, basically dictatorship and revealing of the secret society should be a clarion call to every single parent that you cannot trust the public schools. You just can't. You can have control over them, in which case, I guess, in that instance, it'll work if you control the school boards. But in so many instances, you know, they can weasel their way in with, because they can outspend you. They can use the larger media in the area to, you know, endorse these people. And of course, the static bureaucrats, the teachers' unions, they are going to, you know, they're just tip to stern a representation of degeneracy at this point. So you don't really have a chance. So it's just a great time to start homeschooling. Just get the kid out. There's nothing there. I know it's going to be hard, but the fact is they've gone so far so fast that to organize a group of parents of the right mind shouldn't be hard at this point, right? Because everyone who is of a right mind can see there's just no hope in the public schools any longer, and then just pull the kid out. You know, so this is the world we live in. Same advice to the people who are quitting their job all over the United States because of the vaccine mandate. I mean, if we permit them to implement vaccine mandates, we will be living in a slave state within a few years. I mean, literally a slave state. So we just have to fight them with everything we got. The people who lost their jobs, and there are hundreds of thousands now, they are the heroes and patriots of our burgeoning rebellion. And so they are now in a position where they have to organize. You know, we've been, for all the reasons we've talked about for all these shows, the European has been kept from the natural organization that ethnicity would promote. Well, now we have to go back to it. And as we go into the dark winter, to use an expression, we will probably see lots of things taking place very quickly, all of which will be helpful to us, to our organization, to help us realize that evil has gained political power. Evil controls the media. It is directed against us. And we have to organize ourselves to be able to, survive and to get beyond it.
Yeah, I think to recognize it's not a question of right versus left, Republican versus Democrat. It's the people versus the regime. I think some of these parents are realizing this, where, you know, they've trusted the school system. They pay their taxes and they go to work. And then they realize what's being done largely behind their back, without their consent, with their tax dollars, mind you. Homeschooling has exploded. It's, I think, as many as 13% of the kids now in the United States are homeschooled. I think the lockdown and the school closings created a big increase in that in the past 18 months. But also, what they've been doing, the school systems have been hijacked and used as laboratories or, you know, indoctrination centers. And that's been going on for decades. It's accelerated in the past few years as the Long March to the Institutions, you know, reaches its end. The thing is, it's a structural issue almost, or because the people who infiltrate and take over the schools, that's their full-time job. Whereas the parents who pay the taxes, pay for the school, they're too busy getting on in life and keeping a roof over their kid's head and putting food on the table to combat it. And so you have a group that's very organized and dedicated and well-funded. One of the things that the parents discovered, I think, when they thought they could innocently go to the school board and give them a piece of their mind and threaten them in a way that's legitimate, like we're not going to vote for you. You represent us. Is that they're not just fighting the school board, they're fighting the oligarchs. And this is
Yes.
why, all these programs that are being implemented are funded by the Pritzkers, by these foundations, by these corporations. And this is why the Department of Justice came down upon them, because they're not fighting the school board. The school board, they're proxies, or they're just foot soldiers, following orders, giving the marching orders. The big agenda is this broader issue to sort of this alchemical debasement of society, so you can atomize and demoralize everybody, so you can create a slave state, a feudal state. And so, when you start, it's almost like if a group of parents were going to organize and stop the local drug trade, they're immediately fined that the authorities would come down upon them, because that local drug trade has connections to the intelligence agencies. It was like Catherine Austin Fitz says, she phrased it this way. This says, when local parents get together to fight Tony Soprano, they realize they have to then have to deal with James Bond. So
Yeah.
it's a much high, yeah, there's a meta level to this stuff. And that's what they discovered. There's much greater forces. This shouldn't frighten them. It's people have to realize this is sort of the power dynamics they're dealing with here. The
Well,
same
yeah,
thing with with everything
and
else
it
that's going
creates a
on.
strategy.
Yeah.
In other words, you are fighting the oligarchs, therefore you don't beat up the local school board degenerate. It doesn't it,
No.
he'll be replaced by someone else. What you need to do is take a different strategy, an oblique strategy, where you try to separate your child from the influence of the oligarch. It's funny because I here in California, these are common problems, and I actually know parents who are involved in this very thing. And when I talk to them, I bring up, I go, look, think about the Hungarian Soviet. Think about the children inside the schools being given the sexual degenerate education that Bella Kuhn, a real name Cohn, and Gregor Lukacs, a real name Lowenstein, had in mind for the Hungarians. Think about that,
Are
right?
you
Your parents.
suggesting a pattern here?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, Tim.
Merrick Garland, is he a
Yeah,
Baptist?
I mean, I'm just suggesting I'm seeing a pattern here
Yeah.
that they always have sexual degeneracy as a recipe for a workers' paradise somehow. And they always have the position that the European Christian parent is somehow not sophisticated enough to see how this will eventually get us to the workers' paradise. And if we complain, well, like in the case of Gregor Luchas, they just shoot us, right? Or in the case of Merrick Garland, they arrest us. So, we are up against a long-standing project, and we the parents need to understand it exists, and certainly now there's more and more evidence, it's more and more difficult to avoid seeing it. I mean, look at the people in Australia, for heaven's sakes. The idea of going into a school board meeting, trying to protest or physically threaten, which I guess did happen in one instance, it has no meaning. The only thing that has meaning, Tim, is the organization to create the new education structure for your child. Because this one, the one that people are used to, the public education, it is not. That, I mean, it cannot be saved. You don't even want to try to save it. It is part and parcel of this project that has gone on against us for over 100 years. So you got to get the kid the hell out, and you need to organize among the parents who have the same understanding of moral reality. You have to organize them into a new world. You see, this is what the new world will be. It'll be our organization where we will communicate from ourselves, and we will be freed of all of the intimidation of political correctness. All that will be gone. It will all be gone because that will be part of the old world. A lot of these parents were well-intentioned. A lot of them fell for the workers' paradise concept of multiculturalism, all of these different things that were told that we needed to do. I mean, I don't know exactly how they got transvestitism as a morally, you know, kind of beneficial direction, but they did. In any case, that's over. That's part of the lockdown, part of the, the fake money. It's just part of all of these cultural elements that are attacking us. And all that matters, Tim, is just getting together with the parents that have the same moral understanding of the world you do, organizing for your kids, organizing for your economy, organizing for your self-defense.
And also acknowledging that the system hates you and wants to destroy you. I imagine some of these people are upper middle class. They think they've made it, they've arrived, and the system works for them. And they're realizing, no, the system actually despises them and wants to see them dead and their kids taking hormone blockers and transitioning to, you know, whatever 53rd gender that may theoretically exist or something.
But you just genocide because obviously the child is not going to be in a generative relationship.
Yes.
After they get done with him.
Yeah. And it just goes off another issue, but there are two other stories that caught my attention this week is in the Chicago area, Kim Fox, the George Soros installed prosecutor there, decided not to prosecute a gang shooting of which there was videotape, uniformed cops and witnesses. One man died, several were hospitalized because she said it was mutual combat. No. And there was another case where a person showed up for a fist fight and ended up being stabbed to death. And she didn't prosecute because it was mutual combat. And then there was a case out in Oregon. The headline read that white man shoots black man after he compliments his girlfriend. And I'm sure. And then they have a videotape.
Transcript of that.
The compliment consisted of him yelling and cussing at the black guy and grabbing at the guy's girlfriend. Now, it's not clear to me, but apparently it was not a compliment. And there was some sort of physical altercation, which could justify the use of a firearm in self-defense. Nevertheless, he's been charged with murder or something. Originally, he was charged with manslaughter, which is standard when it's unclear. Of course, they tried to make it in this racial incident. But I love the headline, compliments. Then the young man who is now dead is
because you can just imagine what the dialogue was.
Well, no one believes that. I read the headline. Well, it turns out this guy had apparently posted something on Twitter or some social media talking about if he sees a white girl with a boyfriend, she be single. I'm gonna hit on her. Something bragging about it. So this was sort of this guy's MO. Well, you don't show up, to a gunfight with a knife, and he paid the ultimate price for it. The shooter now is being prosecuted. I don't know what's going to happen to him. If he could get a sham trial or he could be acquitted, but nevertheless, trying to make a racial incident out of it. A statistic like 1,000 times a year, outside bars and parties, black men shoot black men fighting over women, and no one seems to care about that. You know, but there's one incident because it becomes
they actually not that they don't care about it, they promote it.
Well, isn't that mutual combat?
People who are, yeah,
it's mutual combat, isn't it? They know
this is how they can destroy the black culture.
Yeah,
bit debased.
At the same time, they're sending the message that if your wife or your girlfriend or your sister is accosted or assaulted by a black man, you cannot defend her because you'll be prosecuted if you're a white guy.
And so that debases both cultures,
yes.
Both the black and the white are debased, and who's benefiting from that? So,
yeah.
you need to just do an honest appraisal of your circumstance.
Well, even Lori Lightfoot went after Kim Fox. She said, "What are you doing?" I mean, she's shocked by it. The mayor of Chicago was like, "What are you doing?"
Well,
why aren't you prosecuting this case? It's like, they want the anarchy. That's what they want. That's what she's installed for.
It's the brave new world. They're it's a transition. They want the whole, all of the inner cities to be autonomous zones. But to moving on to more optimistic tones, the autonomous zones in the cities are really expanding dramatically. I had to talk to someone who was in L.A. Yesterday, and they were saying it's larger than ever. Obviously, nothing is being done by the government to slow the spread of these autonomous zones, which are really just fentanyl encampments, but they're growing everywhere. And you can see that we're really headed potentially for the dark winter that I had erroneously predicted for last year. It could well be this year, because the food situation is looking worse and worse. And so I think the basic technique that certainly the fentanyl encampments will be experiencing is there'll be no food. And so they will have to forage on the middle class or whoever has food in the area. And I mean, I don't know exactly how they're eating at this point, but, you know, you're starting to see food wholesalers making public declarations that, you know, we're not going to be able to deliver our normal volume. Several large ones have actually closed down. I don't know if you follow, it was yesterday, but one of the largest food distribution companies in the United States just gave up the ghost. They said, we can't keep it open. So we're into, the transition, the purification phase, I think, is coming up. And so, when you see the deliberate destruction of sort of middle-class culture, like in the example you gave with, the altercation, this, I think, is leading to this kind of moral and intellectual abyss, you know, where nothing is working, and the middle-class individuals are being set up for probably a lockdown, I would imagine. I mean, one way they could do this would be, sort of what's going on in Australia, Holodomor, try to lock us down and then shut off the food supply and then just see if they can starve a few hundred million people. It won't be as easy in the United States. I mean, you can really see the advantages of our government when you compare like Canada, Australia, New Zealand to the United States, because there because they have Masonic control and they don't have a Bill of Rights, owned by the Queen. The citizens are just sitting ducks. They have no idea how to defend themselves. I mean, here, you had the renegade county supervisors in Los Angeles County, mm-hmm. Soros funded. They declared vaccine mandates for all these different businesses. And then 2 days later, the county sheriff says, forget about it. I'm not enforcing this. Okay, now, to underline that, he is supported by the Riverside County Sheriff, who last year did the same thing. Now, Riverside in L.A. County, and you're talking 50% of the state of California population. So this is a huge deal, because it is, kind of the rebellion. And it's going to be really tough to try to go to Holodomor to keep people locked down, to force more vaccines on top of them, some kind of debilitating influence through chemicals, when the sheriff won't enforce it.
Yeah, that's sort of this 50 states, who still actually are sovereign, but actually they're flexing their sovereignty a little bit. You see that with the reaction to the so-called vaccine mandate that. That Biden decreed. You had 24 states. Immediately, they're going to sue and not comply. And like I said, some of these mandates, is the law is only one avenue. And I say you can use that route, but that's not the only route, because the law is just a subset of politics. You have other alternatives. Simply just massive resistance and not obeying, not complying with these things, because they have no justification law. Nor are they moral. The overall economy, you do have a situation where, there was a time, remember like Bill Clinton, it's the economy, stupid. And so it didn't matter if he was a philanderer.
Yeah, I can remember that world. Yeah.
Because, how they got George H.W. Bush out of office for some of his, intransigence regarding the settlements in Israel, is they started talking down the economy. And it really wasn't that bad at the time. They just started news stories. This is how you can create a reality. Of course, then I think Greenspan raised interest rates, which created a mild recession. And so that kind of shoved George H.W. Bush out of office. I'm no fan of George H.W. Bush, but that's kind of what they did. They wanted Clinton in for one reason or another. But it was the economy, stupid. And so the idea was that, you know, politicians always want to have a strong economy. But now it's the opposite almost. They want to destroy the economy. And this is where it's almost like you can't look at our politicians as the ones making the decisions. This is a much, I think, bigger or broader agenda. It speaks to the Great Reset and going direct, what they're doing with the financial system. You have right now the federal government, which is now spending almost twice as much as it's getting in revenue. I think they're right now the Democrats are trying to pass a $3.5 trillion Build Back Better budget full of all this boondoggle stuff and mandates, which no one knows how it's going to be funded. It's just something we'll work out later, but it's there to revamp and do a lot to the economy. And this, a lot of the situations, the more they do, the more damage they create with these things, because the economy will heal itself in many ways, because you can do all the stuff, but then people start find ways to get the food, because they want to get paid, they want to feed the people, and in the stuff, but they'll constantly be throwing wrenches into the gears to screw it up. And of course, the biggest example of that would be the lockdown when they shut the economy down, closed. You know, I think San Francisco has lost 40% of its small businesses since the lockdown. And same thing with similar numbers throughout, you know, the cities like Los Angeles and New York. You know, that's a huge destruction of wealth, a transfer of wealth. You've seen what's happened with farmland. I think the biggest landowner now is Bill Gates. And so
sucked up by Amazon.
Yeah, so it's a big financial coup they've done. But it's almost like an intentional – it's a controlled demolition of the U.S. economy. And you're seeing what they've done with the finances, where the same – much of the shortage we're experiencing is they can't find workers, truckers, people to unload the stuff on the docks. Or they'll shut things down because someone tests positive or something. You can't really have a functioning society with this type of hysteria. And again, it's a managed hysteria, because it's intended to destroy civil life and economic activity. Good example is watching highlight of the Dodgers playoff game, and people were packed shoulder to shoulder without any mask in the stands. But in Los Angeles, you can't go into a restaurant without a mask on. And there's restrictions still, you know, capacity restrictions. Like, what's going on here? You know, it's like, I guess the Dodgers rate higher than small businesses in this regard. You know, they decided to bring back the brazen circuit. So if you watch football games, no one's wearing masks. And I applaud that. But it just, wait a second. You know, why do we have immigration? Why are they open the floodgates of immigration on the southern border? These people who aren't checked for diseases, including COVID, and at the same time, they're having... trying to impose a vaccine mandate. The system is so dire. I mean, the situation is so dire that you have to, you know, forcefully shove needles in people's arms. At the same time, you're letting people come into the country, you know, millions a year unchecked. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, because that's another part of the agenda.
Unless the government is malevolent.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense if there's malevolence afoot here. And below malevolence is, you always rely on incompetence and bribery, or whatever. And that's why all that COVID funding went out, you know, with the CARES Act. It's more or less bribe people to go along with the agenda, pay for it.
I'm just going to interject that you mentioned, like, unloading at the docks. You know, that's a real big problem. You know, it's not just the 100 ships that are waiting to be unloaded. Tim, the problem is, as it was explained to me by someone who's involved with the food distribution, he says, is that because those ships are waiting there, the ships that should be coming are not being sent.
Yeah, that's a supply chain disruption.
We see all the ships sitting out there. In fact, it's kind of hilarious now. There's a bunch of ships that they're running out of food. They have like signs on the sides of them saying, help us, we're running out of food.
No, what's stopping the unloading?
No one really knows. The idea is that there was some issue with COVID.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
The protocols for getting it through, it's slower than normal. And then it was hard getting workers. But let me just tell you something, Tim. Anyone who buys the government rationale on why these boats are being unloaded would probably take the vaccine, if you know what I mean. It's ludicrous. They're just deliberately keeping them out there. And the public is aware of these boats, you know, not being unloaded. And they have the impression that, well, this is a bad thing, but it's not like my lifestyle isn't going to get unloaded at some point. You know, they will get unloaded.
I mean, people
talk. That isn't the problem. The problem is the boats that aren't there.
Yeah.
The problem is that because these boats are a log jam, that the companies who send us food and widgets and whatever are not sending their boats now. Why would they? With no known point in time to unload the thing.
Yeah.
So those boats are the tip of the iceberg, and that's why this winter looks so grim.
Well, I mean, we predict. Remember, the whole thing started is when you shut an economy down, you can't just turn it back on again. You create all types of disruptions, yeah. And they know this. I mean, people say, "Oh, dumb politicians! They never ran a business before." I understand that. A lot of them are just idiots, and they're just doing what they're told. But at some level, they know what they're doing is going to cause economic destruction. You know, some of them are responding because the public's getting really impatient. Governor Whitmore is now opposing vaccine mandates. So she knows. So we can rely somewhat a little bit on politics.
Beating their hand around the wall.
Yeah.
You know, the vaccine mandates are the primary tool for the slave state. And they're having a rough time. And in the weeks we've been off the air, the rationale for the mandates has just been collapsing. The rate of infection of the vaccinated is no different now than the unvaccinated. So the idea of herd immunity or even avoiding infection is just not real. I think that the often touted problem that the vaccinated are going to have in terms of their immune system actually enhancing and that they will be experiencing more this coming. I think that is very likely, and I'm hoping that this will be the death bell. The slave state will simply continue to go forward because once they've gone down this path, they're just going to go on it until they're physically stopped. But by the death bell, I meant that the awake, purified people who did not take the vaccine will have a completely clear, you know, the clarity of our reality will be too vivid to ignore. We are dealing with malevolence. We have to organize. We have to organize to defend ourselves physically because these people are intending, the people who control the government have in mind to lock us down, to control our behavior, and then very shortly after that to genocide us, probably with starvation. So we have to go in another direction. We have to organize. We have to find ways to get food. I would suggest this is going to be a grim winter. And, you know, like they talk about, well, there's this variant, that variant. I have no idea about variants. I mean, this, you know, because this is complicated genetics. There's different people, different opinions about this. But I know one thing, Tim. The people who have taken the vaccine will have compromised immune systems. And whatever is coming our way this winter, they're the ones who are going to have really difficult time getting through the winter. So you want to be prepared if you have vaccinated people in your home to deal with some, you know, I would say some severe respiratory problems. And also, I would like to find ways to organize themselves in terms of food. Do you know how to grow food? Or do you know, like, you know, do you have any, like, food stored? Because the food chain is a complex thing. And I cannot claim to really understand exactly how it is going to operate in the next 6 months. But, man, I would be dishonest if I said I was optimistic about it really holding itself together. I don't think it's going to. So that means it's going to be up to us to feed ourselves. And again, nothing to be afraid of. Animals have been doing this for a long time. We are designed to be able to do it. We just have to start organizing and getting prepared now. And when the crisis is upon us, put your back into it. Get through the winter. And when we come out the other side, we will be a group capable of political action because we'll have clear minds and we'll have organization.
Yeah, there's a lot of reason to believe that the adverse effects of the vaccines are far worse than being reported. One thing is, of course, the VAERS system is a passive system, so it undercounts by as much as some people say you should multiply by 10 or multiply by 100 about how many people are dying and how many people are adversely affected. But one thing is, it's coming clear is what the vaccine does. It immobilizes or destroys a person's natural immunity, which makes them vulnerable to a whole host of other things. And another thing it produces, and this is something that isn't quite clear to me, but it is scary because the idea that the vaccine can produce variants, because it causes, it encourages the vaccine to mutate from people who've been injected with it. And, what happens is this creates an endless source of variants, which under the current paradigm regime enriches the vaccine companies because they come up with excuses for boosters to deal with the new variant. But also the vaccine causes, adverse reactions and deaths. The vaccine is far more likely to injure you than kill you than protect you. That much is clear now. The fact they've admitted, that it doesn't prevent infection or does it prevent transmission. I mean, it's like, so why take it?
Why have a mandate?
Why have a mandate today? When there's also, when there's more than enough established treatments, of course, we've talked about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and all that. Emergency use authorization was never justified because they're standard treatments. Of course, a lot of these drugs now, they say, well, let's use that on animals. Well, people use penicillin on animals. Doesn't mean you can't use it on people. Well, ivermectin, that's horse paste. Well, no, that's one use of it. It's an antiparasitical treatment, but it was developed in the 70s to treat people. The guy who I think invented it was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, and it was approved for use in the 1990s, from what I understand. All of a sudden, now it's like, oh, it's horrible. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Well, compare ivermectin to the side effects of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this thing is without side effects, and the vaccine, it is. The side effects are so horrendous that they have to hide them from the public. They obviously are hiding whatever the reality is.
It appears.
It's absolutely clear.
Well, they don't count. Apparently, you have to have an adverse reaction, I think, 2 weeks later. So if you immediately die from it, it's not considered two days later.
If you ever see the graph of the acute reaction to the vaccine,
yeah.
the deaths occur, like 80% of the deaths occur in the first 3 days after the second dose. So by removing that time period from the definition of a vaccine injury, they have like conveniently gotten rid of like 80% of them or something. But even with their definitions, you're at, there's more adverse events recorded by VAERS at this point than have occurred for the flu vaccine in the last 70 years, I believe. In other words, it's just, this stuff is so toxic that it's just crazy that anyone would go forward and take it. And this was with the idea that it actually did something. Now that the data is just roaring in from all these places that tried the vaccine and have mandated and have 90%, 80% vaccination rates in their countries, they're all experiencing increase in some kind of respiratory problem that they're defining as COVID. Mm-hmm. The vaccine did nothing. Nothing. It lasted maybe 2 months or something, 3 months. And now they are on their way. I think they're on their way to enhanced disease. Because to me, this is all, I know I've said before, but I can't explain how it works, but I believe they have mechanical control. I think that the vaccine is, in fact, stage one of the medical genocide. So the first thing is to get everybody vaccinated. And then from there, there'll be some other song and dance about this next step, but we'll need boosters or whatever. But it's all just a mechanical process that leads to the human population being reduced to just their tribe.
Well, hear about that. It was that Air Force surgeon, flight surgeon, who recommended all pilots who have received the vaccine be grounded.
Yeah.
Get an MRI exam because of the... obviously, one of the big things is thrombosis because of the inflammation that that the vaccine creates, or you react to this, and that creates all host of health problems. One thing is thrombosis, cardiovascular problems, and of course you're sending pilots into high altitude. Think about that, and that why would you possibly disable your pilots? At the same time, they're beating the war drums against China. your conventional military forces can be crippled because you're mandating a vaccine. but she said they're not fit to fly because of the health risk. I mean, how do you?
Yeah, she's seen so many thrombotic, reactions that she knows that there's a really good chance that one of the pilots is going to have this reaction in the pressurized suit while they're flying, and then they'll just hit, the plane will hit the deck.
I personally know three people who I've come across just in the past few months that I'm talking to, who had heart problems right after getting taking the
Gosh, I do
vaccine.
too. I have a, and it's a completely related vaccine injury. I know the wife of my friend who lives not very far from me. She was actually diagnosed with a vaccine injury. So that's how transparent it all was. And I was talking with him on the phone, and he was asking me questions. I'm kind of like spent a lot of time reading about this stuff. And I just couldn't even bring myself to tell him the truth about the future, because you got to remember that, like, myocarditis, these kinds of damage that occurs inside the little blood vessels, it takes a long time to heal, if ever. Some of these vessels do not regenerate. So, what can I say? I wouldn't be taking the vax. Incidentally, just the rates of uptake over the last month have really been very just tiny, even though there's just this drumbeat, right, pounding away, firing people, intimidation, this and that. They're not getting a lot of people who have come this far to move forward, because to be in the position now, to be here in October without a vax means you have some rationale, you have some understanding. Once
Some
that starts,
hesitance.
yeah, some hesitancy. And once that starts, they can't, they couldn't give you burgers back in, April, and they can't threaten you now with, losing
Well,
some government.
I was watching it was Dr. Fauci, and he was being interviewed on some mainstream media outlet, CBS News it looked like or something, and he says, "Well, we've tried, to get the, we've hoped that people would take these things voluntarily, willingly do it, but they're not doing it. So now we're gonna have to maybe p apply some pressure and some penalties so they willingly do it." How is that willingly?
Yeah, that's right.
Take away your job, starving to death. What does he understand about willing? It's like, it's de Blasio that said the same thing. Well, we tried the voluntary, it didn't work, so now we're going to make you do it.
I think that there's that we're pretty close to some violent events. I mean, I hate to say it, because, as you heard me speak earlier, I think that kind of confrontation, is easy for the oligarchs to spin in the wrong direction in terms of PR. And moreover, what do you really accomplish? You're better taking that violent energy and trying to use it into organization of a brand new world to live in. But I do think that the vaccine situation has created so much anger that I would be surprised if there isn't, violent acts short with, people losing their jobs, or and particularly now when they can see that the vaccine has no doesn't work, there's no
Nor does it
universe.
confer any benefit because now it's
Yeah,
like
so
you still have to
I
wear a
think that,
mask and you're still restricted.
yeah, I know. So anyway, yeah, I mean, talk about a flop. But
The seventh booster, eighth booster, maybe by the 10th booster, you get a little
oh
skeptical.
man, and let me tell you, this booster stuff, oh my God. Anyone who had a bad reaction to one of the first two doses of, say, Pfizer or Moderna, for God's sakes, do not take a booster.
But it's the
It
same thing over and over again. It's like, how
well,
many?
you'll have a compounding. There's no question you're going to have a compounding, and your body will just be torn apart. You've got to find a way to not take the booster, because, or at least demand some kind of coherent safety trials, the likes of which were not done, for the vax rollout, so that you know exactly what's going to happen to you. Because, oh man. Oh, and then one thing, I gotta give you a tip for the people who want to get vaccinated. I actually haven't I watched this doctor explain. You have to make sure that you don't inject the vaccine into a blood vessel. So they have a a way to basically, I think it's to pull back on the plunger slightly and to verify that it's actually pulling either air or fluid that's transparent. After they stick it in, if they pull the plunger back, if blood comes out, tell them to do another jab, because this is when I think you get a lot of people who die right on the, you know, on the ride home, is they inject it into the blood vessel. And this is, you know, it's not something that people are being warned against, but some of the presentations I've seen, it's just so clear that if you have to get jabbed, just for God's sakes, insist on that procedure, which all people who do jabs should know as to how to verify you're not in a blood vessel. But I don't even, you know, I feel bad even saying this, because you don't want to take it.
Well, I can imagine if you're the one doing the jab all day, your people queuing up, it's very easy to get a little sloppy.
Of course.
Right? Yes. I mean, just that's, and of course, then with the National Guard doing it in New York.
Yeah, I mean, no, those guys are like
weekend warriors.
Yeah. 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 So you really have to be careful.
One weekend a month.
You won't even make it home, you know, if you're really sensitive to that stuff. So, you know, the purification is well on its way. The number of people who aren't permitting themselves to be jabbed is holding pretty good. There's going to be 100 million of us by the end of winter, depending on how the food works out. And I think we're going to be angry. And Tim, guess what? We're going to have a bonus from the people who have taken the jab unwillingly and then whose health suffered as a result. These will be, I think, the highly motivated politically. And I think they'll be very valuable as we organize our new world.
It's a tough price to pay for that. So. High price to pay for that. Well, one thing is, you know, is the you've heard of the missing executive order, Joe Biden's vaccine mandate?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's nowhere to be found in the Federal Register, and some people are speculating it was a bluff, because it, you know, is a press conference and a press release law, and they can't find it anywhere. It hasn't been sent to to OSHA, and they can't enforce it. Well, they may think it's a bluff, because they say if it's not, doesn't exist, then the 24 states that sue can't sue, because there's no law.
This is exactly the point. I think that they're trying to not put the language into existence, because then the lawsuits can begin.
But then the companies can enforce it based on this phantom executive order.
Yeah, we're anticipating the order to exist, and so we're creating the policy now. They have a kind of defense against the employee lawsuits directly against their organization. So it's interesting. It could just be a bluff. Or on the other hand, Biden simply could have forgotten, because, you know, I've been told that he thinks that World War II is still going on.
So he's just like, that's like stuck to his shoe somewhere? He's walking around.
I mean, every time it's just an adventure whenever you see this guy come on the TV.
Yeah, but they built a mock Oval Office.
So
you can read the teleprompter easier or something.
Well, so that the CGI is less apparent to, you know, on the video.
Yeah, that's I think that's what it is. So you can have the sort of the Max Headroom presidency easier.
Yeah, this is literally the Max Headroom, and this is kind of the future. You know, the leader in, you know, Orwell's 1984. I mean, it's it's just a video representation of power that's supposed to frighten us. So, you know, the hell with it. The hell with them.
Well, I think that's the trend. I think what you're seeing with the sort of a devolution to the states and the federal government is losing legitimacy, any credibility with the American people. And you see this resurgence of the states, which is all in all probably a healthy trend, because if anything, they tend to be less controlled, at least here in the United States. And you do have more of a diversity of opinion and attitudes throughout the states. And
of course,
you know, then you have the federal government.
Look at the sheriff in L.A. County. I mean, you have Garcetti, who is this like he discovered his Judaism, you know, like midstream in his political life, and now is with this zealot rabbi reading, you know, the Torah twice a week. You know, he works with other influenced individuals in the you know, county supervisor roles, and they create the really weird vaccine mandate, very draconian.
Isn't he an ambassador now? Is he given an ambassadorship? Actually, before we go for the night, let me see if I can. Let's leave with an inspirational religious message here,
and we'll there get you. Go.
Yeah, let's see if you can hear this. Let's see. This isn't the height. I'm just putting my microphone up to another speaker. See, hopefully you can hear this. But this is the governor of New York.
We have to get this.
Can you hear that?
Back.
Yeah.
Okay.
What we went through this pandemic made us stronger. I believe that, especially when I talk to young people who weren't able to have their graduations from high school or a normal life for the last 18 months. I say to them, whatever comes your way in life, you are stronger. You are more resilient. God let you survive this pandemic because he wants you to do great things someday. He let you live through this when so many other people did not. And that is also your responsibility. But how do we keep more people alive? We are not through this pandemic. I wished we were, but I prayed a lot to God during this time. And you know what? God did answer our prayers. He made the smartest men and women, the scientists, the doctors, the researchers, he made them come up with a vaccine. That is from God to us. And we must say, thank you, God. Thank you. And I wear my vaccinated necklace all the time to say, I'm vaccinated. All of you. Yes, I know you're vaccinated. You're the smart ones. But you know there's people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. You know this. You know who they are. I need you to be my apostles. I need you to go out and talk about it and say, we owe this to each other. We love each other. Jesus taught us to love one another. And how do you show that love? But to care about each other enough to say, please get vaccinated because I love you. I want you to live. I want our kids to be safe when they're in schools. I want you to be safe when you go to a doctor's office or to a hospital and are treated by somebody. You don't want to get the virus from them. You're already sick or you wouldn't be there. We have to solve this, my friends. I need every one of you. I need you to let them know that this is how we can get fight this pandemic, come back to normal, and then start talking about the real issues that we have to, fighting systemic racial injustice, which exists today. And if there's a denier, I will take you on any day because I've seen it. I know it exists. And we are not going to have a blind eye to this ever again, any longer under my watch. And that is my commitment to you.
So that, what, are you inspired? That old time vaccine religion?
I have to tell you something. I have a vaccine from God, and it's, you know, I can guarantee you it's better than like a 30% effectiveness. You know, I mean, I just think that the idea that this particular vaccine set is divine. I mean, you may have been able to make that story like in April, but now with it like failing everywhere now, I think it seems pretty. It's just as a digress.
I think it comes from an area a little south from heaven.
Yeah, it does. You know, actually, I got to tell you something. This is kind of funny. People don't realize that there are a whole genre of COVID vaccines that were prior to, you know, the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And people didn't know about it. There's like dozens of them. But they weren't for humans. They were for animals because they had corona infections in animals. And so they had all of these super low-quality vaccines whose only – they had like 50% efficacy, kind of like the ones we have now. But the purpose was just keep the herd animal alive long enough to fatten them up so they could get them to the slaughterhouse.
There you go.
And that is really what we are now with this set of the vaccines, is that they said it was super duper and it was sterilizing and it had a 98%, but a blah, blah, blah. Well, no, I don't think so. It lasts 2 months, has no efficacy. And all its design is just to get us to the political slaughterhouse. So, you know, Tim, I think we should close because, you know, you're still, in the recovery phase. And, I just wanted to, it's inspiring to hear like a divine person, you know, give us inspiration like the governor of New York. What a crackpot. just ludicrous. But anyway.
Well, at least she has religion on her side. So.
She has religion on her side. And anyway, Tim, great to hear your voice again. And we'll get them again next week, okay?
Okay, take care.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.